Welcome back to Cargumentative, a Times Alive podcast where we discuss all things cars and motoring. I'm your host, Thomas Faulkner from the Sunday Times. And as usual, I'm joined in the studio by
Brenwyn Naidu, a writer for Sowetan Motoring and Sunday Times Lifestyle Motoring, and a contributor on Ignition GT.
It's quite a mouthful.
Thank you for having me, yes.
Thanks for being here.
I practiced that.
I hear so. It was very fluent and smooth.
She sells your signature shells. I've adjusted the font size. Okay. So
that's chilled. Good.
Got that 8 Calibri going.
Bold or italic. Okay, enough. Sean Causton, I am the producer of Ignition GT, and that's where my title ends, so my signature's quite short.
That's how it goes.
We go around the room.
Okay.
I'm
Pootsie, I'm just a fanboy.
who's my fan?
Falconer. No jokes, man. Pootsie Mbiani, writer at Business Day Motor News, and colleagues to these fine gentlemen, yeah.
And this is your first time on the show, huh?
Yeah.
It's an honor to have you here.
Thank you.
It's been weeks in planning, this whole meeting.
I've been planning for this, so you don't know.
I don't know. What I do know is that it's the beginning of the show, and that means it's time for news.
Yes.
Brenwyn?
Shall I go first?
What's struck your fancy?
Okay, well, on the week of motoring. So at its annual State of the Motor Industry event last week, Toyota announced it would be investing 2.43 billion rand in the production of a new passenger car at the Prospecten plant from October 2021. It's a good piece of news. It's a move that will also create 1,500 jobs, and we all know that the nation needs jobs. They haven't released the specifics, but they did confirm that the model would be offered in petrol and petrol electric hybrid derivatives, the first time the plant will be producing hybrid variants. So, exciting times.
What could it be?
Well, there's a lot of speculation as to what it could be. Could it be a replacement for the Yaris? Could it be an additional derivative of the newly launched Corolla Quest? We don't know. Maybe the Hilux is going green.
It could be a Hilux hybrid.
Could be
that
too.
What are the chances?
Could be that too, yeah.
What about an Aygo?
Well, I mean, look, we all know that times are tough, okay?
Mm.
Many consumers are downsizing. So my bet is that it would be something in that compact space, an Aygo or a Yaris-sized...
passenger type thing.
Mm. Yeah, budget hatchback.
And considering that they will build it on the same platform which they built the Corolla.
Yeah.
So it's nothing out of the ordinary. Mm. Something quite irregular.
Sean?
Ah, yes.
What's on your radar?
So, I have seen that there is now an all-electric Hummer coming out.
Yeah, that's right. It is. It's coming back.
With some crazy figures. 746 kilowatts, and listen to this, it's not a typo, 15,592 newton meters of torque.
Are you serious?
That's decent. Like, literally, you can put that on a jet.
That's ridiculous. Yeah. I think the most torquey car I've ever had on test was an old CL65 AMG, which had like 1,000 newton meters governed.
Yeah.
So that's like basically like 15,000
of those.
I don't understand how they'll be able to put that down on the road. How do you put 15,000 newton meters down on four tires?
By powering a whole mountain called a Hummer, which, you know, you need that kind of power to sort of shift that huge body.
Yeah, it is. But it's interesting.
How long will it last, the range?
Yeah,
5 kilometers?
5 kilometers. Literally the drag strip. Literally the drag strip.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's going to be so heavy because the battery density on that car must be like enormous.
No, to produce that kind of power, obviously, 100% has to be massive. But an electric Hummer, one of the, like, H1, H2s, they sip petrol like it's going out of business. Yeah. And now it's all electric. So it's quite cool. It's quite a cool contrast. I like it. I'm looking forward to
it. It's quite cool.
Yeah.
LA will love that car. Yeah. LA will just go bananas.
Bonkers. So 20th of May is when they're saying is going to be the release date when we'll finally see it.
Okay.
Place your order.
Hmm?
Place your order.
Mm.
I think Arnie already has. Because he's a big fan.
Get down! Get down to the electric Hummer. Oh, good times.
But that seems to be a trend now. I mean, ever since Tesla unleashed the Cybertruck, everybody's now on this big pickup, electric pickup drive.
And Rivian. Rivian
as well.
Beat Tesla to it.
We, yeah.
Hilux hybrid.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Could be a Hilux hybrid.
Playing catch up. Yeah. Catch up.
But what's taking them so long? Why is everyone only jumping on now? Pickups, buckies, etc. around the world are so popular. Why are they only jumping onto the electric pickup now? Why are they? I don't understand. Like,
well, you say pickups are popular. But Pooty and I were chatting about it earlier. The X-Class. Mercedes-Benz X-Class is no more.
Shame.
They finally drove the last nail into that thing's coffin.
R.I.P.
I certainly won't miss it.
I mean, I'm
telling you.
That car was doomed from the moment it came out. I mean, everybody knew it was built atop a Navara platform. So it was basically a Nissan Navara. The premium on top of it was huge.
Massive.
The ride was so hard and like it was just never going to sell.
I disagree with you there on the ride. I thought it was pretty damn good. Especially having driven it at Gerotech compared to an Amarok, which is, I think I speak for everyone in this room, that's our favorite bike, isn't it? It was plush, but I think it was just too expensive. And I mean, look, it was a wasted opportunity. Mercedes-Benz has formidable expertise in the commercial vehicle arena. They've been building trucks since
and
forever.
Unimogs.
Yeah. Unimogs. Mm. They could have done something quite spectacular, but no. It was just an underwhelming badge engineering exercise.
I think the biggest issue was where were they going to position this? It's a Bucky. In South Africa, for instance, Bucky's, there's an expectation of what Bucky's can do. The X-Class was neither good off-road. And at the same time, if you're offering it at such a premium over the other ones, what are you saying it does spectacularly over the others?
Sure.
Does it drive well? Does it out-accelerate them? What exactly? That's where the problem was. It was a jack of no special trade.
Yeah. It like straddled no man's land.
Yes.
And had a massive price tag on top of it.
You know what I mean?
Didn't really warrant, you know?
But going back to your point, I actually agree with Tom. I didn't like the way that car rode. I thought the suspension, even in the Navara, I didn't feel like the Navara was leaps and bounds ahead of any of its competitors in terms of the way it drove. But yeah, I agree. Like the V6 in the X-Class does remedy it with the Mercedes gearbox and the Mercedes engine.
Sure.
It does make it, but it's $1 million. And does it feel like $1 million? Not a chance.
It definitely
does.
No.
Not a chance does it feel like $1 million. And that's the biggest problem.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't have launched with the 250D that had the 2.3 Nissan engine in first.
Yes.
They should have launched with the V6 first to say, this is our Bucky.
Mm.
And then bring out the lesser derivative a little later on. That's what I think they should have done.
I agree. Poor product planning.
Uh-huh.
So the X-Class is no more. It might become a classic. Who knows? We'll talk about that later. Pooty, anything on your side that we haven't mentioned here?
Yeah, apart from Toyota's investments, which I feel that they could be better used at SAA right now. But hey, they need it more. But I think for me, it was that whole Boris Johnson pronouncement that is banning all new internal combustion engines by 2035.
Yeah, so basically
pretty big.
Yeah, so from 2035 you will not be able to buy a diesel petrol powered car in Britain.
And that's around the corner.
Pretty much.
The way these years are flying,
around
the corner.
We'll all be comfortably middle aged. I'll be in elasticized jeans and comfortable walking shoes.
Yeah, I probably need to invest in a pair of Crocs.
No, but if you look at the bigger effect of this all, is it's not only that. I mean, he's matching the likes of Jaguar, the likes of Citroen, the rise of Tesla. Basically, if Europe says we are not doing internal combustion engines, simply saying the world is really getting rid of this. And are we ready in South Africa?
No, definitely not. Yeah.
Does that mean we're going to be turned into a Cuba and buy secondhand V8s? And
sounds good to me.
That sounds great.
Let's
do that. Let's do that. But look, I don't think it's gonna work out in such a dramatic fashion. The African market accounts for a large chunk of these manufacturers' sales, and it would be in their best interest to continue catering to our specific needs, or at least, you know, weaning us off internal combustion and onto electric, because as we know, infrastructure, we still need to catch up in many areas. So I think it might be a bit longer than 2035 for us.
But what if we get the shock of our lives and right, just switch off the plug, boom, like that's it, no more.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine like if Cyril suddenly said, right, by 2030?
Not a chance.
You know? Can you imagine? Yeah.
Wow.
It would be like, what
you see, why the UK, why they can say that is because they've already, like Brendan mentioned, the infrastructure is there. They're already electrifying their public transport. They've already got, they're experimenting with electric buses and et cetera. So they're on course to actually electrify their whole public transport, which in turn makes it a lot easier for them to say no internal combustion car engines allowed in our cities. So it's a lot easier for us. I mean, there's not a chance. Those Putco buses spew emissions everywhere.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, it works there. It will never work.
It does, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, they've basically got, 15 years to make it happen.
So, yeah, exactly.
I mean, to me, it's kind of doable.
Yeah,
you know?
It is.
And I think people will just slowly accept it as the years go on, you know, towards the deadline. Electric cars are the things to buy. We've all seen manufacturers are all bringing in electric cars in various shape, form and size. So, you know, it's just a matter of time before that becomes the mainstream.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, see.
It will happen.
Yeah, they currently we're selling what, less than 500 electric cars.
Less than 500, but we must remember as well that last year a record number of manufacturers revealed their first ever EVs. So
Porsche,
and all these fantastic and well-established brands. So it's going to happen, but it might take a bit longer in SA.
Just gives us more time to enjoy old school internal combustion powered cars while we still can.
Yeah, which is why I'm going to ask you for that loan. I want that Cayenne, man, that classic Cayenne. I have to get that.
We can talk afterwards. But right now we're going to have a break, and when we get back, we're going to be having a debate about future classics. Tune in to Cargumentative every Monday morning on Times Live Motoring. You can join myself, Thomas Faulkner, and my regular gang of automotive misfits as we discuss motoring news, views, and of course have a cargument or two. That's Cargumentative, only on Times Live Motoring. Welcome back to Cargumentative. Guys, in this section of the show, we're going to have a little debate about future classics. Now, in past shows, we've spoken about this before, but today, there's a little bit of a twist, because we're talking about classic SUVs. You know, back in the 90s, the SUV started out, it became a thing. It's now ridiculously popular. If you don't have one, you're not moving cars. You know, townsfolk love them. People in the country dig them.
Everyone. There's an SUV for everyone.
There is.
No, essentially now, if a person describes a car, they mean SUV.
That's true.
It's like
buying
a car.
That's what children are drawing.
Yeah, without even sort of clarifying if it's a sedan, it's a car.
Yeah.
It's an SUV.
I mean, when we were growing up, we used to draw hatchbacks. That was the thing, you draw
three-box sedans.
Yeah, now people are drawing SUVs because it's just become, you know, that's so what, natural. That's what it is. But, this whole thing came about. Pooty and I were in the canteen, and young Brenwyn was there as well.
Hello.
And we were enjoying some lunch and a chat, and Pooty said, "What about classic SUVs? Like, if you go back in time, there's surely some models and variants of the breed that are possibly going to become modern classics."
Yeah.
And if that's not already there.
They've been around long enough now as well.
Exactly. I mean, they've been around, some of them been around for a good 20 plus years.
So it's definitely a valid subject.
Yeah. So the challenge was, we all had to go home, do some homework, do some Googling, and then come up with a classic SUV, well, a candidate for a classic SUV. So...
I go first?
You go first.
You're excited.
This one's
excited,
your baby. Yeah.
Wow. Look, for the longest of times, if you guys remember, the classic SUV, there were two. We had that funny Lambo that looked like a Hammer.
Yeah, what is that called again?
LM002.
Yeah, that's
the Rambo.
Right.
That was a poster boy for classic SUVs, right? Yeah. And then we also had the Range Rover.
Yes.
Which for a very long time was I don't know, the creator, the daddy of SUV, the genre. But, man, as soon as that whole thing blew up, that first Cayenne for me was just
hideous.
Fabulous. It was fabulous.
Hideous.
I mean, come now. I know Porsche people who admitted, like, okay, yeah, it's not our prettiest moment, you know. However, as time has gone, that came out, what, 2006, somewhere there?
2003, I think.
2003.
Yeah, it was even earlier than that.
Yes, and we've got newer versions of it, which they've tied up, you know. And I think it's arrived at a point where it's too anodyne now in terms of how it looks. It looks okay now, but it's just made the first one that much prettier now. You know, all those bad mistakes, now they've just come up as art.
It's funny how that happens. Sure. I mean,
that's quite a statement.
Yeah, that's quite a statement today. Or I think pulled on some stairs.
I think I agree with you with the first generation Cayenne, the facelift version of that. So there was that original one, the very first one, which kind of had a small face.
Yeah,
it looked like it had this like small face on a big car,
and these big Adams in front.
Yeah, and then it got a facelift, and that just looked, that looked better.
Yeah, they largened the headlamps.
Yeah,
just made it look a bit more substantial. I agree. Although I kind of get what Pooty is saying. How that first gen came full circle in terms of its ugliness, you know, and now it's sort of attractive in a novel way, much like
me.
Yeah,
Thomas Falconer, handsome guy. But I was actually going to say, much like a BMW 7 Series, the E65, the bangle pinned 7 Series, it came full circle. And on the subject of BMW, I'd like to contribute my predicted future SUV classic, the BMW E71, which anoraks may know as the first generation X6. Okay, now hear me out. It was the first sport utility vehicle coupe. It inspired an entire genre. BMW calls it a sport activity coupe, which led to the unfortunate acronym of SAC.
So, oh my SAC.
So,
what a great looking car that is.
But look, it was ungainly, but progressive in terms of its styling. And they sold tons of them. So,
I'll give it to you. It's fine. However, I have to correct you. BMW was not the first to come up with a coupe SUV.
Let's hear it.
People have always given credit to BMW, and it doesn't deserve it. Seriously, the first car that came with that shape was a Ssangyong. It was an Actyon.
An Actyon?
Yes, Ssangyong Actyon.
Was that like the Rex
one?
No. That was that funny looking.
But you're right, though. You're actually right.
Yes. Yeah. That was the first one. I don't know how
BMW
took the limelight out of that. Yeah.
But the Ssangyong did launch before the X6.
Yes.
So
isn't that Hannes Oersthuizen's favorite car of all time? You know, Hannes used to be editor of car. He loved that thing.
Wow, he likes strange cars.
Very strange.
That thing is hideous, man.
Hideous.
Indeed. So were we all at that age.
I agree with you. X6. I think that will 100% be a future car.
It was an interesting car. I mean, I remember when that came out. I think it was, what, 2008?
2008,
I think it came here in 2008, because I just got into this game. And I remember Guy Kilfoyle, he used to be the PR, man at BMW, arrived on a launch in one, and I was like, wow, that's
interesting car.
It's an interesting looking car.
You clearly hadn't been to a Ssangyong launch before.
No, I hadn't. I haven't been on any launches.
I've got a great memory. My first BM test cars was an X6 2011. And this one had a television in the rear seats. Yes. So me and my girlfriend at the time watched Practical Magic in the back of an X6, which was...
Was cool. That a date night?
Was it
no, we were just
Did you have enough room in the back?
They hit, look, I'm not a tall chap, so that sloping roofline was fine for me.
So, and this was a standard TV. So it came with TVs in the back. Was it good quality? Was it big? I mean, how...
By contemporary kind of standards, I think it would be quite grainy. You know what I mean? Because we're used to super HD now. Yeah. But the novelty of... I mean, it was quite a cool car. It was chunky. It had a really wide stance. And it was the M50D derivative with its three turbochargers at the time. So lots of power. I think it's
overly complicated.
Overly complicated. Will probably break.
Yeah.
I think I'd go for the X6M if I were buying for future classic status.
Did that come with the TV screens?
Yeah, did that generation come with
you could spec it. You could spec it. The TV screens are optional. Yeah. Remember, we're talking about BMWs.
It's ridiculous the things we do with technology. I mean, I remember the first time I got an iPod. It was the first iPod that had video playback. And the day I got it, I went home and I watched Love Actually.
Ah, fantastic.
On my iPod. On my bed. I mean, it's pathetic. Fantastic. It really is.
It was a good movie, though.
Yeah, it had its moments, I guess. Yeah. Okay, so you're going X6.
I'm going X6.
You're going Cayenne. But which model?
Turbo.
Not the Trans-Siberia.
No, ooh, thank you.
That's cool, though. I saw one the other day. There's one that drives around Rosebank, and it's often parked on the street. And that looks cool.
I love it.
Want to go and explore. And
the Trans-Siberia.
It's got those cool headlamps on the top and that roof.
Spare rack. Wheel.
I'm not a big fan of SUVs that look like they can go and do the job.
Yeah.
But seriously, you're not going to go and take a whole R1 million onto some bush.
Yeah, but you can pick up these Cayennes for like 150k now.
Mm, they're dirt cheap now.
A friend of mine picked up a turbo, a facelift turbo, for like 200,000 rand.
Lovely.
And it was basically, I mean, it's fun.
It's a touring.
It's a working car. It works.
Yeah.
Brings in some...
Don't say that.
It is.
It's a touring, it's a good thing.
It's a good thing. Okay, so you're going Cayenne Turbo. You going X6.
BMW
Sean?
X6.
I've got quite the oddball, guys.
Okay.
You're going to look at me funny, but hear me out. Toyota FJ Cruiser.
What?
I like that car.
Okay.
I think that
Toyota
car is awesome.
FJ Cruiser. So, yeah, a bit of background. This was obviously the retro restyled of the FJ40 that Toyota used to make back in the day. Sales were never great. They never were. They started off great.
Yeah.
2006 it was launched, started really well in America particularly, and then rising emission regulations and 2008 financial crisis plummeted. So they ended in 2014, but interestingly, if you go and search, especially in the States and in the Middle East, those cars are holding at least 60% of their value. Some are even going, if you go look on the American sites, you can actually see they're going for $35,000 to $40,000 for an FJ Cruiser.
Are you serious?
Swear. Go have a look. They are holding their values in the Middle East. They love them because they were so competent off-road. People loved them. They were entirely competent off-road. You could do everything. Obviously, on-road, it was a bit rudimentary. So I think a lot of people, as the market moved, didn't move with the market. But I think it's going to be fantastic. And we're seeing retro-style cars are coming back. Ford's launching the Bronco. I really think this whole retro-style is coming back into fashion, and this FJ Cruiser will be really, really, really worth a pretty penny one day.
Nah. And suicide doors as well.
And the suicide doors, that was awesome.
Everyone loves those.
I really like that car. I remember going on the launch, and I just love the styling. I love the color. It came in like that khaki, like the Desert Storm. Was it called Desert Storm? They had like names to describe the color combo packages that you could
spec. You could even have a yellow one. Yeah. Powder blue. I think.
And it was really good off-road. I think it was better than the equivalent Land Cruiser.
Wow.
Because the overhangs were shorter. It was more...
Okay.
It was more...
No, it's good. I'll give it that. But I say FJ to that, you know? And if seriously, I can shop overseas for a Toyota Classic SUV. Do you guys remember the Mega Cruiser?
Mega Cruiser?
The Japanese Hummer.
Yes.
So it was basically a facsimile of the American Hummer, called the Mega Cruiser.
There you go.
It looks identical.
So if I have the internet and the power to bring down, I'm going to bring out an FJ. Bring out that thing.
A Mega Cruiser. I have to look for this now.
Yeah, I'm actually going to start Googling it myself.
Mega, is it two words or one word?
I think
word?
It's one word.
Think of it as Hummer with D4D.
Okay, I see it.
There is one in Cape Town, I believe.
So they basically took the Hummer and made it better.
They fitted Hilux headlights onto it, I see.
I suspect that the Mega Cruiser went to market before the Hummer H1. At that time, the Hummers were still military devices, full on. It's only later when Hummer decided, okay, let's put some carpets into this in the radio and sell it to people.
Well, Wikipedia says it came out in 1995.
So
it was probably, that was after the Hummer.
After the Hummer.
Hummer goes back to the 80s, I think.
Yeah. Did they sell the Hummer to people in the 80s?
Only movie stars.
Arnold.
Arnold.
You had to live in Hollywood to qualify.
Hollywood.
I think that FJ Cruiser, guys, I think that's honestly going to be a future classic.
And it was cool because it came out in a time in Toyota's manufacturing history where they were making really dull stuff. They didn't have the 86. They had nothing really that was cool.
No, just purely mundane average cars.
And then the FJ came along. You're like, wow, okay, that's where you've got.
It looks really good. Yeah. I think it has that 4-liter V6.
That thing is ridiculous. Yeah,
that's why they obviously ended up culling it.
That's why it was big in the Middle East, because you had to own an oil field in order to run exactly. FJ Cruiser.
But yeah, in the Middle East, just they are so popular.
Where they are popular.
So popular in the Middle East.
But you were talking about residual values, even in South Africa. They hold their value well. You go into Auto Trader now, you're not going to find one for less than 400,000.
Seriously, I haven't actually looked on the local sites. Wow.
I must look after this. I love looking at stuff on Gumtree and Auto Trader and all those kind of sites. It's like a hobby of mine.
It's a great pastime, yeah.
But then you feel hollow knowing that you will never be able to afford them.
No, you've got to dream big. Go home, get into your room, lock the door,
how you guys,
fire up the internet, and browse Auto Trader.
You know how you enjoy these sites? I look at these sites like Gumtree and all of them as automotive Tinder.
Automotive Tinder?
Automotive Tinder.
That's good.
Yeah, that's
you know.
It's fitting.
Yeah, it is. Huh?
You're chasing a dream.
I don't know. I've had more success on Gumtree and Auto Trader than I have on Tinder. But that's another discussion for another day.
That's for a different podcast.
Do you guys want to hear what I chose?
Yes, please.
Okay, cool. So
it's going to be a shocker.
It's not. So to me, the coolest, most iconic compact crossover SUV.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm not talking big, mud-slinging, dirt-flinging off-roader.
Yeah.
Compact crossover SUV. The original Toyota RAV4.
Yes.
That is a cool car.
Agreed.
Lovely.
Agreed.
Lovely.
Agreed.
Cuddly of you. Very cuddly.
Cuddly. And I can actually still remember there was a print ad campaign when it came out here. Yeah. They called it Claudia Schiffer in hiking boots.
Yes.
So and that cool. kind of stuck with me. And I was like, that's you know.
I think I also know where you got the love of that car from.
Yeah.
If you remember, at that time you were young guy.
I was a young
guy. Used to watch KTV on Mnet.
It
was KTV.
I didn't have Mnet.
Yeah, and they were sponsored a RAV4. The
one
first
of the Dalmatian
ones. Yeah, and they spotted up in these cute little things, and the presenters used to ride around it. I think that's where you loved it from.
Yeah. Because that's where I remember it from, but yes. I'm pretty sure it was YoTV.
No, it was Mnet. Those Mnet days.
I didn't have Mnet.
I didn't have Mnet either.
Is it?
No.
Didn't they wrap it in like a leopard print?
Yeah, they wrapped it in leopard print, if I remember.
But it is like it's a car that basically birthed this entire crossover genre.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, you had the RAV4, and then you had the Honda CR-V.
True.
I remember when Honda launched the CR-V, a new CR-V, a couple of years ago. They had a press release that said the CR-V was the first. I was like, no, guys, no.
Fake
no.
news.
I'm calling it. Yeah,
yeah.
Calling it. Yeah.
Fake news.
It was just a cool car, you know. It brought some off-road capability into a package that you could use every day. You could drive it on the highway. You could do long-distance trips.
I want a teal one.
The way it looks, it's a cool-looking car, even today. Yeah, when I see them, I'm like, you don't see them very often.
No.
But when you do, you're like, geez, that looks cool.
Yeah.
Like, it really is a cool car.
Yeah.
I dig it.
It puts me in mind as well of the first generation Daihatsu Terios.
Huh? Yeah. A little bit.
Similar WhatsApp group.
Yeah.
That was a little bit fugly, but the RAV4.
RAV4 was pretty.
The three-door has aged very, very, very well. I mean, I remember, like, last year I'd gone mountain biking somewhere and ended up in a car park, and there was this guy that had a mint green three-door RAV, and I was just, like, circling it. I was like, wow.
It's lovely color.
Cool. He was like, what are you doing? I'm checking out your car. It's cool. You know, you don't see these often. He's like, yeah, I've had it for ages. And
Jesus, so much cuteness in here.
Huh?
Can I just break this cuteness with something proper? How about an old school Audi Q7 V10 TDI? How's that for a
classic?
Sorry, just one thing. The maintenance costs make me sick.
Touareg, it's okay. The Q7 was a V12.
Yeah, think of the V12.
The Q7 did have the V12.
That was a monster.
We could get the V10 Touareg.
Yeah. I'm glad we're back to real stuff.
If you like lots of cylinders.
Yeah, I like that V12 TDI Q7.
Yeah.
No, cool cars. That whole generation, I think. I mean, that first gen Touareg, go and sit in one and you'll notice just how over-engineered those cars were. It's fantastic.
And never forget the suspension. It was the first generation of air suspension. And it would be so violent, violently go up and made you queasy. Yeah, I've just raised the suspension. That's why I'm dizzy.
Even the heated seats in that car. I mean, our motoring photographer Valdo, he's got one of those. The heated seats go up to level 5. It's not like your namby pamby on or off heated seat. This is like you can cook an egg on there.
That's cool because if you're in layers of clothing, you can just adjust it.
Exactly. Yeah.
No, but I think the follow-up model brought out that V8 TDI. Which it's quite rare. It didn't stay long on the market, but man, what a car! That V8, that would run with the best of them.
Yeah, it would. Well, to wrap it up, if you're looking at buying a classic vehicle, don't discount the SUV, because there's some real gems in there which might be worth investing in. Guys, we're gonna have a quick break, and when we get back, we're gonna be talking about cars we've been driving and launches some of us have been going on and haven't been going on.
Great.
Man, this aircon is racist.
For the latest political news
and in-depth discussion and analysis
on events making headlines in South Africa's socio-political space,
join myself, Amil Amro, and my comrades from the Sunday Times Politics Desk for our Sunday Times Politics Weekly podcast. You can find new weekly episodes on the Times Live website every Wednesday.
This is not a shit.
Can you please come in?
Welcome back to Car Argumentative, guys.
Thank you.
In this segment, Car Connoisseur's Corner, we're going to be discussing the test cars you've been driving and some of the launches that you've been on. Brendan, I know you've been busy.
I've been a busy bee.
Yeah.
I've been a busy bee. So I've got three drives that I want to mention in this Car Connoisseur's Corner, Triple C. First up is the Citroen C5 Aircross, the Citroen.
Yeah, how is that? I've got that scheduled and it looks quite nice.
Extremely pleasant, Thomas. You'll appreciate appreciate it.
Is it comfortable?
It's comfortable. So it's got hydraulic cushions that work in tandem with the shock absorbers. So they do tend to bottom out on more severe protrusions on the roads.
Wait, but hydraulic cushions like seat cushions?
Well, it's sort of like a pod that they put above the shock absorbers, I think.
Okay.
Just like
a hydroelastic vibe that they used to have on original Minis classic back in the day.
Oh, yeah, like on the original Mini. Yeah,
okay.
That similar principle, yeah. Mm. So they've tried to invoke some of that spirit of the Dayes.
Yeah.
Which I actually got to sample alongside the C5 Aircross, and let me tell you that the magic carpet ride offered by a Dayes is peerless.
I've never driven one. Is it as impressive as riding everybody says?
It's like it's so comfortable. I mean, bring your S class, whatever. This thing, 30-40 year old car. It's older than that actually. It's 65. The Dayes. Yeah.
Incredible.
Okay, so
I think the problem with Citroen is that it only looks good in France.
The problem with Citroen,
it just doesn't fit in with our lifestyle.
It's unfortunate because it's a good car. It costs just a smidgen over 500k for the top spec one.
So that's everything, inclusive.
Everything.
You get like,
everything.
You know, heated seats?
No, you don't get heated seats.
Do you get that weird perfume spray that goes into?
They've done away with that. They're trying to be a bit more mainstream. Yeah. You get nav, reverse camera, all the essentials.
So you get Apple CarPlay?
You do get that, and Android Auto.
Do you get those red roof racks?
No.
Because the C3 I had.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a C3. This is the C5. This
bit is a bit of an oddball. With
this is the Big Daddy.
This is the main.
This is the Halo car. Yeah. Oh. Citroen SA
exactly.
range.
Exactly. It's the Range Rover of the Citroen range.
But it's a shame because the latest January statistics show that the C5 Aircross sold 5 units.
Well, you see, we've seen this unfold before.
You see, this is the problem with Citroen. It's like that girl who's hot and cold, hot and cold. Mm. You don't know what, you know, should I commit? Should I commit? No, no. Because you know that she's just going to get up, leave the table, go overseas for 2 years.
And say au revoir.
And then come back and say, hi, let's go for coffee again. It's like this weird thing. You never know when Citroen's not going to be around.
Yeah. That's
true. Or they're suddenly going to pack their bags and leave.
They're trying.
Because it's happened a few times in SA.
It's happened a few times.
Three times.
Well, actually, the first time they pulled out was in 1979.
Yeah.
Because, and I was told this by people at Citroën Peugeot HQ, the French government did not support apartheid. And, you know, Citroën had manufacturing operations in South Africa. They built the DS locally.
That's right.
They built the GS locally. They had facilities in Johannesburg, Pretoria, and Port Elizabeth. So they were booming here.
Mm.
You know, if they had stayed the course...
Mm.
But I guess, you know, they made a principal decision to pull out. But anyway, they came back in 2001, and they've been here ever since. But in 2016, they didn't exit. They just said, guys, we're not bringing new products, but we will take care of our existing customers.
Mm.
But like you say, hot and cold. Anyway, they've got Xavier Gobiel there now, who's, you know, really well known in the industry. He turned Renault around. I think if anyone can do it,
he
could probably do it, you know.
Yeah. I think Citroen's fortunes would be served better by South Africans who start dressing up better. Because seriously, you have to, if you look at Citroen in France, you know, just passing around people wearing gorgeous fashion.
Eating giant.
Maybe that's the problem. Maybe that's the problem. You know, we wear t-shirts. Yeah, berets. It doesn't fit.
I'm going to wear a clothing line that said Citroen on it.
Citroen.
If it was French and I was in France, yes.
Wow. I don't know. I really like Citroën's design. I think it's very cool. It stands out from anything else. Would I buy one? Possibly. Yeah. I've looked at cactuses before. I won't lie. On Autotrader, cactuses. I really liked the cactus. I thought it was a breath of fresh air. You know, but the flakiness around them, kind of always...
It's a prickly pear.
It is a prickly pear.
But it's really a shame because I've also driven the C5 Aircross and it's a fantastic car. It really is a very nice car. The ride is very, very nice. And it's something different. It's something unique.
Exactly.
It looks good. And I'm a French fan. I love my French cars. Yeah. But yeah, it's just such a shame because it really is a good product.
Yeah.
It really is.
No, we're all Francophiles in this room. We all love cheese and Edith Piaf and all the rest. And we want to see French brands. Yeah, we want to see French brands do well because their products are good.
Mm.
But actually, they also need to just up their game and make a bigger song about the fact that they're going to stay, they're going to take care of their customers and all the rest.
So, from the avant-garde to the ordinary,
yes, nice one. Good link there. That's why you're the host.
Huh?
Yeah,
exactly.
Like that. Okay, yeah, to the ordinary, but actually kind of extraordinary. The Corolla Quest, ladies and gentlemen. The most you'll pay for a Quest is 317,000 rand, stand to be corrected.
Yeah.
Fully loaded, based on the 11th generation Corolla, which was a really fantastic car, in my humble opinion.
That's the nice Corolla.
That's the nice Corolla,
Like the D4D that you had and drove down.
That story is played out, though, but you can read about it on Times Life.
Anyway. I'm with you, because I was there like someone else.
Okay. I was kind of shooed away from the launch, guys. I was kind of shooed away.
Wow. Okay, yeah, so look, I mean, lovely car, well-priced.
Sensible.
Sensible. It doesn't feel like how the previous Quest felt, quite discontented and sparse. This thing feels nice and substantial.
Is it just me who thinks it looks better than the Corolla? It is based on the old one.
It does. With the fenders and that line that runs across the headlights.
All they did is give the Boxback special, sort of make the headlights look smaller and sort of spray painted some black. And it's like a completely different car.
It looks better. It does.
Someone said it looks like it came out of Judge Dredd.
Sure, for a Corolla.
I don't know. Which influencer was that?
How much was she being paid, or he being paid to say such a lie? But tell me, the interior, are the seats vomit-proof? Because a lot of these cars end up as Ubers, and a lot of them are
well, let me tell you a story.
By drunks. So
I didn't vomit in one to test it. But anyway, the guys at Toyota said that less than 20% of these cars are actually sold to the Uber market.
Yeah. What?
That was weird.
I don't know. I take that with a pinch of Aromat.
Yeah.
I mean, every single day I pass a Corolla Quest, and every single day it's a man scrolling on a cell phone that's attached to the windscreen or some part of the dashboard, and you know it's an Uber.
Maybe he's watching Ignition.
Maybe it is, but maybe it is.
DSTV now, guys.
Exactly. Plug.
I can't believe it's only 20%. That sounds
sounds a bit unbelievable to be quite honest. Eh?
I believe it's an association that they're not particularly proud of.
Yeah.
The fact that they sell most a lot.
It's
of
like saying only 10% of hires taxis are actually uses taxis.
Yeah, where are the rest of the 90%? Come on,
exactly.
Who are you fooling here?
Sean?
All right, so I've been driving. There's two cars that I want to mention. So the first one, Mini Clubman Cooper S, I've been driving. Just the Cooper S, not the JCW with that new 2 liter, which produces some stupid figure.
Okay.
But so the Cooper S, it's kind of middle of the road. It has that inherent Mini characteristics to it in terms of the way it drives, the way it handles. Yeah. Not as engaging and as taut as a hatch. Obviously, it's a much longer wheelbase. So, not really. But what I want to chat about, Kia Seltos. Because I know like you've driven that. I've driven that. The launch is still to happen, but
nice
I've
car.
Driven it.
Maybe I'll go on that.
Very nice. And Brendan's driven it as well. We've all driven it.
I haven't, but I've seen it in the car park. It's a very good looking
it's
car.
It's a very, very, very
and
good
looking
car.
And I'm one of those people who, I've become jaded, folks. Let's just accept that fact. And you walk past a new car and you think, ugh. Just another new, it kind of looks the same as everything else.
Sure.
Everything's a jelly mold of a jelly mold. But the Seltos is a good looking car.
It's a very good looking car. Yeah. And it's very, I must admit, the whole ambience inside the cabin is actually very nice. It's a lot more upmarket than what I'm used to expecting from Kia. It really is quite nice. A few little cheap plastics here and there. And when Brendan drove it, he rightly pointed out that VW have no excuse for fitting cheap plastics into the T-Cross now.
Yeah.
There's no excuse because the plastics and material quality in that Kia is very, very, very good.
Would you say it's better than the quality of the T-Cross?
Yes, I would.
Some soft touch elements on the dash and things like that?
Really? I mean, the plastics are, you can't expect Audi levels of quality, but the plastics are, I'm loath to use the term inoffensive, but that's what they are.
It's also
innocuous.
Innocuous.
Yeah. Innocuous plastic.
It's not hard and scratchy like the T-Cross.
Yeah, nobody likes it hard and scratchy.
I'm actually waiting for a call from VW because not only did I drive it, I wrote about it.
Yeah.
And my verdict was it may very well be the kryptonite to the T-Cross.
It's a very good car,
very good
guys.
Car.
I mean, going on to the interior, the mixture of materials, it's not just one color, one type of material everywhere in their car. There's a nice mixture.
Yeah.
One problem I did find with it in terms of drive, and I've actually experienced this a number of times with Kia Hyundai products, is the throttle is just too sensitive and the calibration with the gearbox doesn't quite work that well.
Yeah.
So what I've found is that throttle, when you put down, your throttle is too sensitive. So you're lurching forward instead of a gentle kind of going forward. And to remedy that, you put it in eco mode, which lessens the throttle. But because of you lurching forward, you kind of pull off on the throttle a little bit, but then the gearbox leaves you in the wrong gear. And then you have to put a little bit more throttle, which then makes the whole car spark, and next minute you're lurching into the car in front of you.
Yeah.
So that's the only problem I didn't quite like. I experienced it the same with the Tucson Sport.
That thing was awful.
But that was running with the DCT gearbox. This isn't really the DCT. That was the only thing I could really say that I didn't quite like. But otherwise, as a package, so I had the top of the range GT line.
Yeah, how much?
450,000 Rand for the GT line. But I wouldn't go for that. I would rather, because Putti drove the EX Plus, which was 390.
Sort of mid-spec.
Yeah, 390, and that's the one I would buy.
Yeah, okay. How much is a decent non-poverty spec T-Cross? That's probably about 360, 370?
Yeah.
Late 360.
They're bringing out a newer T-Cross, which has the smaller engine that's going to be under 300,000.
And the manual gearbox.
Yeah, and then they're going to go. And then we're getting the T-Cross with the 1.5 turbo as well that's going to be coming out.
That is a good engine.
Yeah, that is a nice engine. The Kia Seltos, it really should be on people's radar. It really should. It's a very, very good
car. It already
is.
I think they sold, over 300 already.
Mm. Yeah. It really should.
That's better than
Citroën.
It's a
very nice car.
Shame. What are you driving?
I've been driving a number of cars.
I've been spoiled.
Yeah, no, including the Seltos. Yeah. I'm driving the Honda Amaze right now. But
is it amazing?
Amazingly dull, yes.
Yeah.
However, the car that I want to put on the spotlight, which I think is quite topical, is the M135i BMW.
I'm getting that tomorrow.
Haven't driven it yet.
Spoiler alert.
Sorry about that. Look, the big issue right now with that car is
front-wheel drive.
No, not even, because it isn't front-wheel drive. It is actually four-wheel drive. It's AWD. Is it? Yes.
Okay.
Now, the issue is, this is an M135i. The badge we've all known is associated with a six-cylinder. And this is a four-cylinder, two-liter.
Hmm.
Front-wheel driven.
No, AWD with X-Drive. It's
Of course. Yes, yes, yes.
Hold on. Quick one. That X-Drive, does it have the clever functionality that you get in the M5 where you can customize the drive and send it all to the back or all to the front? Or
I think you're asking too much.
Let me teach you how BMW does things. Very simple. The ones that can do that generally don't have extra letters or numbers after the M.
So it has to be an M.
M2. It has to be. Okay. This is the M135i. So
you just get plain old. Okay.
But look, it was quite a surprisingly comfortable car. Very, very fast for a GTI BMW.
How many kilowatts is it pushing?
225 kilowatts and 450 Nm.
So that's similar to what is in that the new JCW.
Literally, it's the same engine.
Okay.
Importantly, it's the same. It's the same output that used to get from the first generation 335i's. So and those had a twin turbo six cylinder. So same power output on a four cylinder single turbo. But what they've done is, because now it's got all-wheel drive, sort of like a way of recreating six-cylinder performance using downsized parts.
Yeah.
And I like it, you know, for the fact that, okay, a lot of people say it's boring because it doesn't sound as awesome. It sounds like a Golf. However, it is the fastest one series I've ever experienced. And I like the fact that you can really drive it ragged now because it's got MX drive. If you remember, the 140i, the 130i, I don't care who you are, you could never drive that thing properly in terms of giving it the beans full on. You were always thinking, okay, I'm going to spin out of here. Now, not with that thing. You just go.
Interesting. I'm looking forward to driving it. I mean, how much is it?
It's quite steep. You're looking at seven. without all the nice things.
But to be fair, it is in line with competitors. In line. Yes. So you can't really hate on them for that. I don't know. To me, it's lost its specialness.
I totally agree, because that was the cool thing. If you wanted a one series hatch, very fast, you could get it, and it was rear wheel drive. Mm. And you always had that element of, like, it's not a GTI.
No.
And it's cooler because it's a rear-wheel drive, and I can drift it if I want to.
And I've got a six-cylinder while...
Agreed. Exactly. You know, it's just, so now that's kind of gone. It's kind of like, well, you're just making another GTI emulator that doesn't have that twist.
Yeah, you see, exactly. I mean, it may drive better, maybe quicker, but it's just... It's lacking character.
But think about it. The world is changing. In June, we're going to have these new demerit system. Now, do you really want to be driving a wieldy rear-wheel drive hatchback when you can now lose points on your license?
Just don't get caught.
Just don't put it up.
It goes with the times, man.
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it's a great car. I'm looking forward to driving it. But it's just a shame that it's no longer real. Yeah.
Keep your mind open, Tom. Keep your mind open.
I don't know.
Think about the offline speed. Think about those corner speeds.
Mm. I'm still to drive it. I've actually requested instead the 118i. That's going to be quite interesting. I want to see the standard one series, how that drives.
That would probably drive like the Mini you've just driven.
Probably, actually.
Yeah.
Which is no bad thing. That Mini drives very nicely. It really does.
I mean, they do share the same UKL platform.
Yeah.
And the same parents.
Yeah.
And the same parents.
What have you been driving, Tom?
I eased into the year with a Volvo XC60 D4 inscription. You know? If adult contemporary music was a car, it would be this. Inoffensive, but nice to listen to in the background. Mm-hmm. Very comfortable seats. Great ride. I'll give it that. Mm. I mean, I did some minor, like, Jeep track stuff out near Michalisburg.
Nice.
Jeep track stuff.
Well, you know, just like a...
Now, why would you go and assault a Volvo in such vile territory?
Well, because I want to feel what it feels like. Not on tarmac. So you have to go down some dirt road just to say that, like, you know, I've done it. It's all-wheel drive. It has an off-road mode.
When is it going back?
It's gone back.
good.
I didn't do the Camel Trophy.
I'm glad they took it away from me.
I just did a little bit. Jesus. You know? But it's a nice car.
Mm. It is a very pleasant car.
It is a very nice
best
car.
Best car in the world.
It is very, yeah, very nice.
I just, you know, I still hate the infotainment system. I loathe Volvo's tablet swiping thing. I mean, do we really have to adjust fan speed by swiping up and down on the screen? Do I really have to adjust the temperature by taking my eyes off the road, squinting at the screen because it's a bright day and having to, like, you know,
it's a problem.
It's silly,
you
guys.
See, when that first came out, I was like, geez, this is actually really good. It's a bit cumbersome to use.
Yeah.
But now that you've experienced the latest infotainment systems from, like, your Mercs and your Beamers and all the other thing, it feels a bit slow. It feels a little bit, it just doesn't have that efficiency that the other infotainment systems
it's not great.
Has.
What I did like was that bird's eye view parking camera. That's very good.
Witchcraft.
And, yeah. I just got, well, so after the Volvo, I got a Defender. And the parking system on that thing is terrible. And the cameras are all grainy. It looks like it was, you know...
from the 90s.
Yeah, like, you know, Golf War spec.
But, no, I feel you. These infotainment systems, the sensors connect in Volvo parlance is a bit tricky to operate. And those fingerprints.
I hate it. Oh. Just give me some mechanical...
Keep the cloth,
It'll spray. It'll spray.
Wet wipes,
I think also Volvo just needs to experiment with bigger capacity engines. They're 2 liters, particularly in the XC90. The bigger one, it just feels like it just can't compete against rivals which have larger capacities, which are a little bit more refined, a little bit more powerful, and just
smoother and less noisy and less frenetic. And you don't have to have like 100 gears.
I think in the XC60 application, that 2 liters fine. But as soon as you go up to the XC90, then it becomes a little bit strained.
You need at least one 6-cylinder engine in the range.
You've got to have a 6 in the range.
No, guys, I lived with an XC60 for a while.
Yeah.
In D5.
Yeah.
High inscription spec.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. The climate control, the digital climate control, not Iova.
Just give us some mechanical buttons for that. You can just feel and tweak it.
Agreed.
However, I think the greatest feature in the car is that autonomous driving feature that they have. I don't know if the car that you had had it, but Volvo is the best self-driving car so far.
Yeah.
I mean, that thing will track a road. Even if there are no lanes, somehow it managed to see that it's the edge of the tarmac, and I'm going to turn here. It is brilliant in terms of switching off from traffic.
Yeah.
You want an XC60.
I never tried that, but I've got trust issues.
But that's I agree with Tom. I've got trust issues. I tried it once in the XC40. I just went straight into the next lane. I was like,
I don't even
never
use
again.
Cruise control, man. I'm so ridiculous. Man. I never use cruise control.
You go on websites looking for cars and you have trust issues.
Big time. Big time.
But is Volvo losing their edge in terms of their safety? Because now everyone is safe. Everyone is remarkably safe with autonomy and all of that. Are they losing their edge, or
it's
what
a tired
are they working
narrative.
On?
Now?
Not at all.
It's a tired narrative.
I think they're still ahead of the game because they're the only ones who still bring out a sort of central roof airbag that comes down from the roof. They're also pioneering outside airbags for passengers, for pedestrians.
Mm-hmm.
So look, they've got their game sorted.
Yeah.
Nobody's touching those guys. Literally,
okay,
nobody's f***ing with them.
You just had
to. Are we
allowed? You just had to. You just had to.
Is that allowed?
That's an emotion. It is.
Damn.
It is.
It's Tom's rules, guys.
It's my rules,
Tom's
guys, and we can play by them. unfortunately, guys, we're out of time.
On that bombshell.
On that bombshell. On that F bombshell. I've got to wrap things up. You know, Paige is in tears. She's young. She isn't used to swearing.
I feel just like joking. We're going to go to HR after this.
Yeah. We are going to end up in HR.
Well, FJ.
I will. Yeah. But thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
It was a joy having you guys in the studio again.
Great.
And to all of you out there listening, keep it safe on the roads and join us back next week for another episode of Argumentative.